Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Into the Neuroverse presents
Sort Your Brain Out. Baby, sort your brain out. It's crazy, sort your brain out. And let the sun shine in. Sort your brain out. Lady, sort your brain out. It's crazy, sort your brain out. Don't let the bad guys win. Sort your brain out, sort your brain out, mate.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Into the Neuroverse, where I explore my neurodiversity and find some little tips and tricks and ways to help me out. I've got my friend Jamie here, Jamie Firth. Hello, Jamie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, sir.
Good, good. How has your week in the Neuroverse been? This section's called
This Week in the Neuroverse. This Week in the Neuroverse.
Pretty good, I think. I know that I spoke a lot about the cat being not well last week.
How is the cat now?
Absolutely back to his best.
Oh, he's fine.
Yep.
He's lovely.
Fully recovered, I think.
You know, my life this far has been so full of death, I just assumed that's it. Everyone's about to die. That's made me feel so good.
I'm not gonna kill a cat just so that you can continue your poor record.
Jamie, I hate to say this, but I'd written him off. What if a vet said that? I hate to tell you this, but I just written that guy off. No chance, mate. Ned, similarly, the rabbit, Ned, we've been wondering, why does he keep eating his own poo? Is that wrong? Are we doing something wrong? He shouldn't be doing that. Quick Google, solved everything. They have to eat their own poo.
They have to?
Yeah, they can't digest it properly.
I mean, who polices that?
When they eat food. Well, we have to now. No, quite the opposite from before, where we were saying, Ned, stop eating your own shit. We're like, Ned, eat some shit. I'm wondering if we have to collect it and then keep it for him. Basically, if a rabbit eats food, they don't get the nutrients from it. So it passes through them. Then they have to eat it again to make sure they've got the nutrients.
And they get the nutrients on the second go.
Yeah. Maybe we're all missing a trick here. Maybe we'd be like super bad if we just ate our own shit.
Yeah.
That's a tip for everyone out there.
You first, frankly.
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't know. Someone else do it and let me know.
Yeah. In the comments.
Any of this incredibly non-responsive community. So this week in my Neuroverse has been fun, stressful. I got very tired. I did a gym session doing handstands, which I felt quite good about because I did a few handstands. And I was like, I didn't think I'd be able to do a handstand, but I did. But then, classic ADHD, and I've done it today. I've wound everyone up, but it was my son's birthday party, and I said, we'll do like a hero quest in the garden, I'll be the wizard. I have done this for them in the past. Kids came around, but they're now 7, gave them all a sword. Just thought that's a good idea, isn't it? Don't need party bags, we'll give them all a sword. Not obviously a blade, not a machete, a foam sword. But they then obviously just beat me for about an hour while I was trying to be a wizard and lead them on this quest, which I'd spent quite some time working out, not long enough. So it was quite intense, but it was fun. I think they all had a fun time. Everyone enjoyed the hero quest. At the end, I came out as the dragon Gargarex, which was actually an inflatable T-Rex that I'd got into. You've probably seen these things. You get into it, press a button, and it inflates. And then
I have not, but I will
they're,
be.
They're quite incredible.
Googling this immediately.
Yeah. Obviously, when I came out as the T-Rex, they all just ran upstairs screaming. Eventually, they came down and then they beat me with swords. I think it was an amazing party. I mean, I'd have loved that if my dad had done that for me.
Yeah.
You know, I won't be honest. I mean, I will be honest. I partly did it because it saved me like 400 quid actually doing a proper party in like a place.
You mean you didn't bill them?
No, I mean, as in I didn't. No, I didn't bill the children or their parents. But and then after that, I drove to Oxford and did two quick gigs. Gigs were quick. The driving to Oxford and back was not. Got home about 2 a.m. Felt dreadful. Ned sat in the room with me, started thumping because he was really angry that I wasn't in bed, I think. Literally started thumping, like, as in, fuck off, go to bed. It's very intense. But what I want to say is, don't get yourself too tired. I forgot the golden rule. Don't get too tired.
Yeah.
Because then you get poorly.
Yeah,
and so it got a bit wobbly. And then so on Monday, I'd going for a casting into London, which was nice to get a casting. And then I made myself had a day of rest, what's called the artist date in the book, The Artist Way. And okay. I went to see the film Zone of Interest, which is about Nazis. So not nice, but very interesting. And I got to just sit down and watch a film for a couple of hours. So that was good.
I read something the other week. I can't remember if I actually mentioned it on the show, but it was about if you need to rest before you need to rest.
Yeah.
So, if you find that you need to rest, you've gone too far. You should have already had a little rest.
Apparently that's the case with water. You know, when you drink water before a show, apparently it's too late. You've got, you know, if you're doing a musical, my friend Luke, who's in musicals, and he said, you've got to be drinking it through the day. If you're drinking it just before the show, it's not going to help.
Rest and hydration, isn't it?
Rest and hydration. Oh, it's all so dull, isn't it?
We skip to the tip bit?
Yes, okay. Well, that's the tip bit. Rest and hydrate and sit in the sun. I went and sat in the sun for 5 minutes today and it completely helped me turn things around. It really did. So now what we're doing, in a slight change to normal policy, which changed last week.
Yeah.
So we're changing again. People are probably used to this, but I'm almost there. I think we're almost honed in on the final. I was going to say the final solution. That's not what I mean.
No.
I think that's the opposite.
Stay at the cinema.
That's the opposite of what I'm trying to achieve here.
Yeah.
But I do recommend seeing The Zone of Interest. Everyone should see it. Do you know what it's about?
I don't, but I feel like we shouldn't get into it after you've dropped the...
It's about a house next to Auschwitz, and the commandant lives next to it with his family. So you're seeing them all just going about the daily business, and then over the fence you're hearing this horrific stuff going on. And it's amazing, but deeply upsetting, but very important, and everyone should watch it. But what we're doing now is we're going into the brain boardroom. That's the idea of the new section, My Brain Boardroom, where I chat to a friend in Sort Your Brain Out. The Brain Boardroom is a real thing I created in my mind, so it's not a real thing at all, where I go in and I fill it with people like Barack Obama and Storm from the X-Men and Paul Daniels in this one, and I get their take on a problem I'm dealing with. And so I thought I'd try that out on the podcast with one of my wonderful celebrity friends. And I brought Nick Helm to talk about anger. We almost entirely just talk about comic books and a load of other shit. And then we get to it in the last couple of minutes. So hang in there. But Jamie, did you have any thoughts on anger? My point that I was trying to ask Nick, which I found quite hard to express, was I find it difficult to express anger. Now, I know you find it difficult to share sometimes. Have we said that?
Yes.
Not the singer. You find it difficult to share the singer. But you find... I mean, no one finds it easy to share the singer. But you find it difficult to share. Do you find it difficult to access anger?
Yes. I'm a pacifist by nature. I very rarely get angry. And if I have a kind of flash of anger... I will crush it down inside myself and not express it.
To confront someone about something that is a problem, and you need to go up and go, listen, I've had enough of this. Are you able to do that?
No.
No. Okay. Well, neither am I.
No, I'm just incredibly passive. And I am just generally like quite laissez-faire about everything and kind of make the best of things. So I don't have a lot to get angry about, to be honest.
Well, you've got it sorted then, haven't you, Jamie?
Well, it's probably all deep down there, buried. One day it'll just come spilling out all over the place.
Do you think so? Occasionally peeved?
Yeah, I guess occasionally peeved. But
that's my next Edinburgh show.
Occasionally peeved. Slight eye roll.
Occasion. Lovely. Right. Well, that's all we got to say, because me and Nick talked for too long. So this is just a brief chat before that. So here is Sort Your Brain Out. Let's go into the broader room with Nick Helm.
Sort your brain out, mate.
You keep much stuff from your childhood art stuff. I've got it down to like one exercise book that I wrote a story about me and my friends going into the world of Talisman. I don't know if you remember that Games Workshop.
No, I don't remember that. I've kept over the years, like every couple of years, I'll thin it all out again.
Yeah.
So it's like an ever evolving process of getting rid of your memories and getting rid of your life. But
it's like we're whittering down what actually matters, maybe.
Or just but what matters of out of what's left.
Do you ever when you're going through stuff, because I did it recently, and there's some things that hold so much complicated memories and relationships and connections to a person, or I didn't really know how to deal with them. Do you know what I mean? Or that part of my life, I didn't really know what was going on. That I literally, there's a couple of things I picked up, like things from when I was doing shows of Avalon, you know, back in the day in Edinburgh, and I just sort of threw it across the room like it had electrocuted me. It kind of it freaked me out so much, just the sheer amount of stuff in that one thing. And then I just binned it and felt really weird.
Oh, right. Yeah. I've got letters I've not read.
Wow.
That I'm like, I've never been like emotionally ready to read them.
From old lovers?
Yeah.
Really and, old.
Or like from...
elderly lovers.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I've got not loads, but I've got stuff. With the school artwork stuff, I used to be really good at art. Like I used to be really good at it, and I used to really love it. What I hated was the coursework, because even today as a comedian, I find it impossible to write stuff down before I get on stage. So all of my energy goes into on stage and generating material while I'm on stage. And then I go back and I think about it. And then next time I go on, I maybe combine it differently. Oh. But I don't do loads of coursework. So I don't have loads.
Saying that to me, you saw that I'd written out all this stuff.
Yeah.
And you were like, what do you actually write that? Well, you know, you couldn't quite believe that I had it written out like some nerd's essay, you know, just printed off all my life. But I guess that I find that now I'm doing stand-up as myself, I find it very hard to write because it is very much in the moment and it's very much my feeling. But I felt like with Anna, I guess that was more like a play that I was writing it in a sense.
But is that every time? Because when me and Nat interviewed you on our old radio show,
yeah,
you did like your Anna Man show was one of our most popular episodes.
Oh, I love that.
It was like an hour, like we just basically just prompted you every so often. And so obviously you kind of like tap into a thing where you can, you're just improvising. But then, well, I say obviously, but maybe you don't. Maybe everything is sort of like pre-thought out.
Yeah, no, it's not pre-thought out. I really struggle to pre-think things out. But what I can do is just like write loads and loads and loads when the, you know, when the thing's on me, the muse or the ADHD, and I'm just blah, 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 and it all comes out in a stream of writing. So I guess I'm improvising writing in that sense. But I do love this idea, and I've deliberately tried to do it recently as myself, of going up and accepting when you're on the stage is when it happens, and it's in that forge of ideas and seeing how it works. But I remember seeing you doing it and finding it quite terrifying, as in putting myself in your shoes. Seeing you like kind of properly play with the audience, not play with you, but like have an idea, and then you were just pushing it as far as you could go and seeing what happened. That's what it felt like.
Well, when I'm on stage,
very exciting, but it's terrifying for me, the idea of doing that.
When I'm on stage, I'm just focused, and when I'm not on stage, it's like I just can't grab the idea. And so I'll go through periods where maybe one or two times a day I'll have like hyper concentration for maybe 20 minutes where I'll be able to sort of like, I'm good at working. Well, I'm good at working with other people. I'm probably a bit of a nightmare. But when I work, I like working with other people, because it just focuses you in that time that you're with them. Like, let's say I've got one project with Ian and another project with Laura and another project with Philip. And every time I'm in a room with Ian, I'm working on that project.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so occasionally when I'm on my own, I'll have like a burst of like focus and ability, and I'll write it out as either a like a text, or I'll write it out as a like a note on my phone, and it'll be like. But I used to write plays. I used to stay up all night until 7 o'clock in the morning writing plays, and I used to have like a lot of focus and a lot of ability to do that. And now I just sort of like have to just grab it in chunks and snatches and bits to sort of like get it all down. But when I'm on stage, I can kind of like, if I go on with the right like ingredients, I suppose, or like bits, like I know that I've got a story about this when I was a kid, and this what happened when I went to the doctors and whatever, and so I know that I've got those bits, but I don't know how I'm going to use them until I get on stage, and I might not use them, but I've like gathered the ingredients, and you get on stage to do a show, and then eventually through trial and error you get your show. But with
Fun. I think that's where I've kind of gone a bit with the stand-up, is I do kind of just, I know I've got all these things, and just play around and see what happens. And it's very exciting.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And when it really, but it's, I think with Anna, I had a degree of safety because I knew certain things that were, especially with the show, I knew like this, then this, then this, then that. You know, there was a play element to it, as in like a theatre play. But now I don't know if it's going to work or not. I always knew Anna was going to work because it was almost like, but I'm like you, I do grab these bits here and there. I do really struggle. Like most of the Anna show I wrote in the pub in like an hour, and most of it didn't change. Like it evolved a bit and adapted, but I just got it in one, like you say, writing those plays, it just straight out.
But my favourite things are the things that sort of like a song would be, I've got an idea for a song, and then I sit down and I'll write the song, and I'll do it in one session, and maybe I'll rewrite it a little bit while I'm recording it because some of the lyrics don't fit, or they're not as funny as they could be, but or they're too funny, you know, and you've got to make it work as a song. But like, it's never that they're too funny, but you know, I find
it's frighteningly funny.
Yeah. When you sit down and you just sort of like, it all sort of like comes out, and you're just like, oh, that's great. A lot of the songs I wrote for Uncle, I wrote in one sitting where I just sat down and I wrote them because I knew what they were. But sometimes you have a song, I'm trying to finish off a song that I've been writing for 10 years. And it's just, maybe that song doesn't, I've got the music, and I've got like 50% of the lyrics, and it's just going round in my head like a worm, and I can't seem to just sort of like finish it. So then I put it on the side, and then I move on with my life. And then every so often I've got a new project, and it comes back again. And you're just like, what do I do with this song? It's really good. But
they kind of haunt you, those things that you haven't finished. I find that I do a lot of, because I'm desperately trying to sort my brain out at the minute. But this section is called Sort Your Brain Out. But like at the minute in particular, I just find I get so overwhelmed. When I'm on stage, I do feel safe in a way. I do feel like this is where I'm meant to be. But I've genuinely got this problem at the minute where I struggle to get off stage because I've been hosting my own nights and stuff. And I just keep talking. The other day, Harry had to like tell me to get off. It was kind of funny, but quite disturbing. Do you know what I mean? Because it's a genuine thing where I struggle with it. Anyway, but we've been putting all this stuff on the board, and then I always end up writing, me and my wife. My wife helps me out a lot. She's very good. Get a wife is my biggest tip to everyone. But I write all these things on the board of what I need to be doing. Okay, so we need to be doing some of that because that's money right now. And that is going to be big if it takes off, you know. And then I always write Jamie, which is this play I've had for 10 years. And then another play I've got. And they're really good. But I just don't see how, do you know what I mean? And every time I come up to do Edinburgh and I say to my promoter, could I also put on this play? And then at some point they'll convince me not to put on the play. And they're right, because it would be a very... Because I have one year, I did do a thing where I did my own show and I did a play, and it was awful because I just didn't have any time for either. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, right, yeah.
But anyway, those things just haunt me for it. I can't, you know, I kind of want to kill them or just do them. But
I think the secret to doing that is to do them. I've got projects that have been on my... I wrote... My very first Edinburgh was a show in 2001. Which was a sketch show, sort of a sketch show. It was like 6 10-minute plays, right? And so it was an hour. And
that's cool.
Well, I wrote a monologue at school that was 10 minutes long, and my teacher said you should take that up to Edinburgh. And I was just like, how'd you take a 10-minute monologue up to Edinburgh? And so I wrote 5 other 10-minute things and made
That's a great solution, though. That's a great, like, you know.
Yeah, because the monologue was brilliant. And then all the other 10 bits were all sort of like of a piece. And then I did that again the next year. And then I never sort of did anything else like that. But that was based on an idea that became like, right, well, that will be my sitcom. Or that will be my, and it's evolved over the time. So that is now my film.
It's like a little taster of Nick Helm, a little a suggestion of possibilities, smorgasbord.
What, the
6 10-minute?
Oh, yeah, it was brilliant. And they were all ideas that I think could sustain their own full-length thing. But they were just sort of like a 10-minute version of that.
Well, that's like very advanced. How old were you then when you were doing that?
20.
Oh, well done.
But when I did a short film called Elephant, set in Brighton, and that was like a 10-minute version of what a sitcom would be. And so I went in and I said I'd like a sitcom. I didn't. I went in and said I've got an idea for a sitcom. And they said, we haven't got any spaces for a sitcom, but what about doing a 10-minute short version of it? And so I said, yeah, absolutely. But if it's only 10 minutes and it's online, because it was the beginning of the internet.
Yeah.
If it's only online, then can I direct it? Because no one will watch it. And they
That's
said,
funny. Yeah. Now we're all desperate to take off online, aren't we? And,
yeah, but it wasn't even 10 years ago, or maybe it was 10 years ago. No, it was 9 years ago. And so I made this thing, but it was always meant to be like a 10-minute taster of what a feature of what like a full length thing would be. But it worked so well as a 10-minute taster that they said there's no point in doing a series. So it was like, I just think sometimes, so it backfired really in a way then, but like sometimes it's a good way of kind of like just sort of solidifying what your idea is by doing it as 10 minutes. But I've had this thing as a one of the sections in this thing has been on my to-do list for 20 years. It's so, it just does my head.
I find that quite painful.
Yeah.
It pains me badly.
Because I'm only adding to it.
But you know, genuinely sometimes there's things that end up in my shows and stuff. Like even going back to when me and Fergus first did thing stuff, and we used to do this song about the Indian, I am the Indian elephant. Did you ever see that? It was a song about an elephant, a love song of two elephants. And I was like the African elephant and he was the Indian elephant. And can you hear me calling? Yes, I can hear you, but we can never meet, like this. And that was a thing I wrote when I was 12. And it just stuck in my head. And it was, and then it just came out one day when we were writing some ideas and it sort of worked. So what I'm saying, sometimes these things get like sort of pulled apart and bastardized. And, you know, I always want to do a song, this really sweet song about the world is out there for you somewhere, which is weird. It's meant to be kind of like a 1920s kind of to the children, you know, how to live life kind of thing. A bit like sort of Dr. Seuss or something like that. And that ended up being in an Anna show where it was my dog singing to me. But it was like the old joke of her sort of going, row, 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 you know, silly little joke. But it's funny how these things, I find that happens a lot where things which I give like grandiosity and turn into these, like, this will be, you know, a great novel ends up being a really stupid joke in an Edinburgh show or something.
But I think it could have probably equally been a great novel. I think that, you know what I mean? It's like, I think there's a sell by date on some ideas, not all ideas. I think some ideas are all time ideas. And I've got a pile of those where it's just like, if I got a, you know, a blank check to do something, I've got like a list of personal projects that I would get off the ground and do. Then I've got like a list of projects that are like, if I could get this off the ground now, it would put me in a position that I could make some of my other things happen. And then you've got kind of ideas that you circle back to, and then you just think, oh, fuck it, let's just do something with this today. And then you do something with it and it either works or it doesn't work. A lot of my shows, because they're quite modular, there's like songs and poems and like, here's an idea for a prop joke. And, you know, I like some of the things that I've thought up on stage and some of the things that I've written and some of the things that have occurred to me over the years and have just sort of like end up being in the show because, you know, literally you get to a point where you just think, fuck it, let's just see what happens with this idea. But
someone like Christopher Nolan though, say, where they've got like this idea and they just can see this like 3-hour movie they're gonna make one day. I mean, maybe they just come from loads of money and that's why they have the time to do it, I don't know. But like, for me, it's sort of like I sort of start having that idea and then I'm like, oh, I'll just take that bit and put it in here or whatever. Do you know what I mean? But the idea of going, right, I'm going to put together this piece, which is going to be this incredible movie one day. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
the,
I know.
The sort of self-confidence of that I struggle with.
Yeah, the self-confidence of Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Who is Christopher Nolan. Do you know what I mean? And he's always been Christopher Nolan and he has created, he's always been a version of Christopher Nolan and he's created this Christopher Nolan and that's how Christopher Nolan works. And I think one of the things that I hate about myself is that I can see the path of how to do it. I just can't ever get on the path to do it.
Right.
And so I've had to trick my career out of me because I've never been able to sort of like sit down and just like go, plan A is this, and then do plan A, right? And so everything, you know, like I've got, I had a preview last night and I spent all day worrying about the preview and doing no work. And then I had to, at some point, at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I had to go like, right, okay, well, your focus today is do the preview. It's not write the preview. It's not invent a new way of working for yourself. It's you just got to turn up and do the preview. And so I took the pressure off myself to do like anything extra than that. Like my only job was to do the preview. And I went and did the preview and I was focused and I did it, the show was really great and it was fun. It's not finished, but I loved the preview. I loved being on stage. I felt like, I feel like a lot of the time, which sounds a bit sad, but it's one of the things that I love most about stand-up is that for that hour I was on stage, I felt like I was meant to be there. And I felt like I was like fully alert and interactive. And I wasn't looking over the fence to see what anyone else was up to. I was just doing my own thing. And I loved it so much. And then I came off the stage and I felt like, right, I've done that. So then my focus became something different. And I beat myself up a lot about the way other people work and about the way other people do it. And I like, you know, you go, oh, I wish I did it like that. And I wish I did it like that. And that there may be a point in my life where looking at other people's work methods, there may be a point where it all clicks and it's like the Matrix. And all of a sudden, all of the little bits and tips that I've learned and all of the pages that I follow on Instagram, it all aligns. And I wake up one morning at 5 o'clock and I work for 6 hours and then I take the rest of the day off. And do you know what I mean? Like, oh, I've got like a method to how I do it. That's brilliant. I finally worked out. That might be the case. And I might all of a sudden be happy about that. But it hasn't happened yet.
Sort your brain out, sort your brain out, mate.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sort your brain out, sort your brain out, mate. When you're on stage, Colin, you're incredible. And I went to see you in Edinburgh 2 years ago, and it was me and a bunch of comedians that I knew. But then also looking over here, there were a bunch of comedians that I don't know so well. And there was a different kind of friendship group over here and over here. Your audience was filled with comedians that came to watch you do comedy in an exciting way that they couldn't do, that we couldn't do.
You know?
And when I'm on stage and people come and see me, then I'm doing something you've got to basically go, what you're doing is unique and it works and it's good. And what I'm doing is unique. It's all mine. And the way that I get up on stage is my process.
Mm-hmm.
Really, everything aside from being on stage doesn't really matter. And as long as when you get up on stage, you're doing the thing that you're meant to be doing and it works and you're happy with it, or it's part of a process which is leading to you becoming happy with it, I think that that's your process and you need to cling on to that. And one day there'll be a thing going, well, do you know, Colin Holt works like this. And people will be looking at that going, God, wow, that I don't know how. Right. Okay. When you look at that schedule on how he puts a show together, that's kind of like how you do it, you know, and people will find that kind of inspirational or mind boggling. But like, I just think it's one of those things I've never found I'm a human being in a competitive mm-hmm. industry, and it is almost impossible not to be competitive or feel competitiveness.
Yeah, yeah.
But having said that, it is the part of me that really gets in the way of me getting anything done.
100%. I feel like with other people's ideas and stuff, and to be honest, I find in life at the minute, I find my shows I love my shows and stuff. I'm quite happy with who I am artistically. I find it's kind of the day-to-day stuff that I find very difficult. Do you know what I mean? Like, I kind of really what I want is someone to give me loads of money or just say, we're going to take everything away from you. You just have to create. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, I guess the downside is that you become someone like Elvis or something, you know, and just go insane. I don't know, potentially. But I don't know, but who knows? But I'd love that if anyone's out there listening. Nick, I'm sure if anyone
wants I'd love to bring you
a pretty penny or two. But no, I do find everything you say is absolutely true. I've got to this point, a nice point, I think, where with other people's ideas and stuff, I absolutely agree. If I go on Instagram and I have to block it, Instagram or Twitter, if I have to block it for hours of the day, because otherwise one tiny little thing in the most innocent way will scupper the day and completely take me off, you know, just fuck the day completely. But I find like letting other people's ideas and stuff just wash over me and stuff is quite nice. And then there's the odd bit I grab. Do you know what I mean? And go, oh, that's clever. I like that they do that. That's funny. Do you know what I mean? Or that's interesting or whatever. But yeah, no, I totally agree.
But that's what art is for as well, right? That's kind of like, that's almost like you as an artist go in a certain mode, you know, but you as an appreciator of art can kind of like look at stuff and it can influence your work because you're a person, and that's what art is for. But when you're like creating it, you have your own process, and we're all complicated, and we're never 100% one thing or the other. You're kind of like in a flux where I'll be on stage and that's me creating and doing stuff, and then I'll cut like an hour later I'll be at home watching telly, and that'll be another part of me. But I'll still have the notepad open in the back of my head thinking, oh, all right, make a note of that, that's interesting, or that's clever.
How much are you kind of, when you're on stage and you're, I'd love to take you into my little boardroom in a minute, Nick.
Oh, I'd love to visit the boardroom.
We've chatted away, which has been lovely, but one last thing I'd say is when you're on stage, just out of interest, how much are you listening to the reaction of the audience that is, you know, say you've got an idea or you've got a story you want to tell and you're workshopping it on stage live kind of thing in a preview or whatever. How much of it are you listening to their response and going with that? And how much are you just having fun and going, oh, that's an interesting idea. I want to pursue that. I'm going to keep going down that avenue. Or do you not? Is it not either?
Well, yeah. If it I might have like a personal story or something new that's occurred to me that I'll want to try just once,
mm-hmm.
where I haven't really thought about it too much, and I'll just see what the story is like in its rawest form, and I'll just go out and it'll be on my list, and maybe it'll be like buried in the middle of some bits that I really am more familiar with. And then I'll go like, right, I've got to talk about this doctor's appointment that I had. Uh-huh. And then you'll go, I don't want to do it, but I'll do it. And then you do the uh-huh. doctor's appointment story, and there'll be like a couple of jokes in there or a couple of laughs that you make. But then you kind of like go, I didn't really love telling that story, so I might not ever tell that story again. Or I might give it another two goes, but if I haven't really cracked it by then it'll just naturally, through natural selection, it'll just fall off the table of contents. But yeah, in terms of kind of like listening to the audience, I'd say it's, I don't enjoy it if the audience don't enjoy it. So I'm always looking for that perfect kind of bit, you know, the sweet spot where, you know, it's like, I was trying to explain it to someone the other day. It's like, if you're telling your best anecdote to your mum, but she's doing the washing up.
Mm.
And she's not really paying 100% attention to you. You're not going to embellish it. You'll just give
the basics. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Basics, yeah, because yeah, you're just trying to get the information. No. It was like this.
Mum, you're not getting it, Mum.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it's like being in front of an audience. And if an audience is laughing at you and really enjoying this, and the story is almost secondary, it's not about the story. It's not about the destination, it's the journey, right?
Mm.
And if the audience are really loving every bit of it, then you're showing off and you're embellishing bits and you're just sort of like really expanding stuff. You're going off on tangents, and a 3-minute story can be a 45 minute odyssey. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, right, there you go. But if they're not laughing, then you do the 3-minute version, and then you're looking at your notes and you're like going, well, where the fuck is this hour that I had? Do you know what I mean? Because everything crunches right down.
It's incredible how something, you know, you go out to do a 10 minute bit and you end up doing 40 minutes, and then you can go out with your whole hour and it goes, it just doesn't land. And
just deflate.
You're like, well, I'm at the end.
Yeah. And it's like, well, we've run
20 minutes.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So frightening.
So
I find that like a dream where you're falling or something, those moments. It very rarely happens, because I tend to, like ADHD and all that, I tend to just keep talking, blah, 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 you know, once I get going, and I can easily fill an hour. But an hour's less frightening to me than 5 minutes in a weird way.
Oh, yeah, me too. An hour is absolutely, I don't have a problem filling an hour. I don't have a problem filling 2 hours. So if an anecdote doesn't work and it crunches right down to like 30 seconds, I've got lots of other stuff I can go to. So I never have a problem filling the time. But 5 minutes to me is just like, where do you begin?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Isn't there some saying like brevity is the heart of wit or something? Is that
maybe
true? Because they're fucking liars.
That's how they do it, though.
Yeah.
And there's place in the world for those people, and those people will flourish and thrive. But you just at the end of the day, you just have to stop going, how does everyone else do it? And then you've got to go, well, how do I do it? And how can I make the most out of how I do it? It's like my dad is always like, why don't you do a podcast, or why don't you do a YouTube channel based on talking people through the historic background of St. Albans, right? And you go, because I'm not interested in any of those things. And so as a starting point, you have to at least be kind of like able to connect with the material, connect with
get that from your family, and I get like, well, other people do it,
and it's kind of like you go, but I'm not interested in history, I'm not interested in I'm interested in films, right?
Yeah.
And that to me is not effort, it's no work involved in that, and it's something that I can just get on board with and do, and then jump off and not do. And it's like, So as a starting point, it's just sort of like, I'm going to, in my list of potential money-making avenues, I'm not going to put stuff that I'm not already good at on. And in terms of how I work, it's like, this is how I work. I can constantly be looking over the fence and seeing what Christopher Nolan's up to, but I don't work like him. I don't even have kind of like the same career goals as, do you know what I mean? It's not like.
You're absolutely right.
And you know,
because I'll watch a Christopher Nolan movie or something and go, why haven't I done that?
Well, I kind of don't really connect with Christopher Nolan films.
No, I'm not that into Christopher Nolan. I don't know why I've thought of him particularly. Well, I guess it's because they're so epic and kind of, you know, they're seen as these grand works and all that.
He's sort of like our generation's Martin Scorsese, where he's like the poster boy of this is how you make a movie.
Uh-huh.
But I don't connect to any of his movies. So even his Batman films, I don't really connect to. So I'm kind of like, well, I don't have that relationship with Christopher Nolan. But like, all I'm saying is that basically you can look around and see how everyone else does it and kind of like be like, oh, I wish I did it like that because it looks so much easier. But A, they struggle with their creative process and they've just found a way that works for them. And B, in looking at everyone else and seeing how they do it, you're missing out on what's special about what you do and how you do it. And, you know, it's all very well to keep you grounded, to just kind of like look out there and see how other people are kind of like getting on. But really, your focus needs to be on protecting how you do it and sticking up for yourself in those situations and being like, no, this is my process and I have to trust in my process because it's got me to where I am.
Mm.
I think.
And Nick, I don't think we've got time to go in the boardroom, but that's all right.
Come on, we can go in the boardroom, can't we?
Well, I'm chatting someone else in 10 minutes.
Right. Okay.
I'm sorry about that. That sounds very harsh, doesn't it? But
that's all right.
No, mate. Listen, but let's go in the boardroom briefly. So I have a brain.
I want to meet Barack Obama.
And this is true. Okay. Well, you can meet him. Come on in. So what I do is, this is when I was going through a very tricky time, downing that Fanta there. Big fan of Fanta.
I use it to cut Pepsi Max Cherry.
You cut it. You put Fanta in Pepsi Max Cherry.
I don't drink alcohol, so yeah, I have Pepsi Max Cherry.
Yeah.
And then I'll do a Fanta top, and it makes it into the most delicious cocktail ever.
Oh, lovely.
It's a little bit of, it's a little bit extra at home.
Why not? Go for it. A little Pepsi Max and a little Pepsi Max Cherry, not just any Pepsi Max.
Pepsi Max Cherry with a Fanta top.
I often think of the Cherry Coca-Cola advert as I'm walking through. Like, you know, do you remember the tune? Cherry Coca-Cola, Cherry Coke.
Cherry Coke, Cherry Coke, the taste is going to open your eyes.
Oh, boy, did it. Boy, did it. I was like, whoa. What is this stuff? This is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, delicious. It really was. Right. So come on into the boardroom, Nick. Now, this is a place I go to in my brain when I'm very stressed or not even stressed, just a bit, you know, unsure. Because, you know, being a neurodiverse person, navigating a neurotypical world, I find very hard sometimes because it's, you know, they say be true to yourself. I try to be true to myself, obviously, but I think the world wasn't always made for myself, you know. And we should be who we are and follow that. But what I like to do sometimes is genuinely go in this place in my head, the brain boardroom, which is not a great word. I just call it the boardroom. But Barack Obama's there. He's over there. If you can see him, if you can picture, imagine.
I can imagine him, yeah.
Very good posture. Very, you know, convincing, but I believe him. Whatever he's got to say. He's got a lovely, but what I love, he's got a very old-fashioned sort of a pin board behind him, and he's just writing on there things. Colin, you know, how do we get through today? How, Colin, you've got to make some money. Colin, that man was rude to you. Right. What do you want to do? How do we deal with the rude man, the weird man, for example? There's different people in there at different times. So Brack's there and Storm from the X-Men, because what she's been through, she's very tough, you know. She, claustrophobia, her whole family died in Cairo. I don't know if you know that. I've gone a bit Anna-Man talking about this. Right now, Paul Daniels is there. Paul Daniels is there, you know. Probably a lot of darkness in Paul Daniels, but I just think about him. I used to watch him when I was with my dad, and he used to go, every second counts. Do you remember that? And I think that's a good thing to remember. Lou Reed, bit grumpy. Not very pleasant, I imagine, but, you know, one of my heroes. My dad, dead 20 years, you know, but the dead can be there. He's a bit embarrassed because Barack's there. So, and then I thought I'd bring my new idea for this podcast. I'd bring some people I admire and love into the boardroom briefly. You don't have to pay any attention to those guys. They're just there anyway. And just get your thoughts on a thing. And anyone you want to bring with you. Is there anyone you bring with you into this boardroom?
Or people that I admire.
Who would you have if you had this boardroom? I've spent the last 20 minutes kind of undermining the whole point of the boardroom, I won't lie, very effectively, but...
I already have.
But that's fine. Who would you... No, it's fine.
I've already undermined the boardroom.
No, not really, but as in, like, the idea of
that we don't need to listen to anyone else's advice.
Well, no, I think that
they're imaginary avatars.
I think you can cherry pick other people's advice.
Yeah,
but I'm not like saying that I don't need other people's advice. But what I'm saying is that you also have to go, well, hang on a minute. The way I do things also does work. It's just a difficult way of me working.
Yeah. And it has done all right, but for me, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Is there anyone you want to bring in with you?
Vincent van Gogh.
Vincent van Gogh. Troubled man.
Yeah, he's probably like, I think he just needed a day out, so I brought him along.
He needed a lovely day in the boardroom. I wonder what he'd make of some of these characters. Paul Daniels and Van Gogh, that'd be the meeting. It's like one of those really shit paintings you get in American diners, you know, of Marilyn Monroe and stuff, but you've got Van Gogh and Paul Daniels.
No, I think that they're brilliant. I love those. What, with James Dean playing Paul?
James Dean's there.
Humphrey Bogart.
Roland Hardy. Just hanging out the bar. What would they say to each other? What would Van Gogh? Van Gogh's a sad. Is it sad?
Yeah.
Your mate, it's really sad. He shot himself in the stomach. Took him ages to die.
Shoot himself in the stomach?
Yeah. He deliberately shot himself in the stomach. I think so it would take longer. Or he was just mad by that. You know, when I say mad, I mean as in have it in a complete episode. And just, yeah, upsetting stuff.
Do you think he appreciated his own artwork? Do you think he looked at his artwork and he went, that's a really beautiful chair? Or do you think he looks at it and he went, why doesn't it look like a fucking chair?
Stuff doesn't look like that, mate. What if everybody showed the photo? Mate, why are you drawing it like that? It doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
You put all them bits in the sky. What are they meant to be?
Yeah, like not everyone would have liked.
What are you seeing, mate? I don't know who this Nottingham bloke is. He's having a go at him, like kicking his paintings. Mate, it's shit, mate. Why are you drawing that? They're not that colour. I don't know. I don't know. I always feel like Van Gogh was it. I don't know enough, to be honest, but was he just pouring it out? I mean, he's here now.
About him. I just couldn't think. I couldn't think of anyone else. And we had... I think he will really get a kick out of this. We had some Vincent van Gogh table mats when we were growing up. We looked at it every day. And my favourite was Starry, Starry Night. But there were others.
That song, Starry, Starry Night. Do you know that song?
Yeah.
Don McLean. I started playing. I'm trying to learn to play guitar. It's one of those things that's taken me like 10 years. And I that was on one of my things on Musician. And I started crying as I was learning to play it. It moved me so much, even though I was literally playing it really like down, 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 down. But it's such a sweet idea.
Also, I suppose learning it makes you more familiar with the lyrics. And then you get, because I've heard that song for years and I didn't know it was called Vincent. And then you go, Starry, Starry Night. What? It's about the actual fucking painting.
Yeah. And him. Yeah.
Then you go, oh, right. Okay. But like, as you become more familiar, what are we going to do in this boardroom for four?
So, in this boardroom, right? Okay. We're running out of time. So, what I just want, I brought you in here, Nick, to get your thoughts on one thing, right? One problem. One problem I find in life, this is a bit too vague, but one problem I find in life is connecting with anger and using it. Not so much on stage. I know you do use it on stage. And in a way, I do. The show I'm doing at the minute, I talk a bit, I've got two kids. I'm very terrified about the planet burning and the authoritarians getting in and all this stuff. I spend a lot of my day thinking about life is going to end up like The Road by Cormac McCarthy. And it's very horrific. And I think I should get out there and do things. But literally, I've got such a sort of crushing weight of terror at sort of standing up for myself or confronting anyone. Even, you know, I was watching a scientist talking about what am I meant to say to my kids when they ask me that I didn't do anything and all this. So that's one side, is going out and putting your head above protesting, doing that. Another side is like on the stage, I want to talk about that stuff. And I've got a good line for it. I think I talk about
at the start, I talk a bit about how we're boiling, you know, we're being reduced in cooking terms. And I talk a bit about boiling the bag fish, if you remember those. And then at the end, I come back to the neurotypical world has brought us to a point where our children are being turned into boiling the bag fish, you know. So it's fundamentally flawed. It doesn't work. It's wrong. So maybe the neurodiverse people should have more say and all this stuff. So that's, I'm giving you a lot of information now. I get that. But it's also that idea of having to be the squeaky wheel. You know, when people say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, you know, you've got to, it's like with agents and stuff. I feel, or whatever, I feel like I'm constantly having to go, I'm here, can you get me stuff? Do you know what I mean? And yeah. And I find that idea so stressful, you know, don't ask, don't get, and all that stuff. And then so that's all the thing. And I was thinking about one episode it made me think of in particular. You see, my dad was quite a big CND man, banned the bomb and all this. He was out there protesting. But I remember I was working at Morrison's pushing trolleys for $1.90 an hour, which even then in 1995 was very little. And it was horrific work pushing trolleys in a car park, you know, in the snow and everything. And I remember being in the back seat and saying, I don't think I should do this job, Dad. My mum and dad were in the front. I said, they're paying me $1.90 an hour. I don't think that's enough. And them just saying, no, you can't cause a fuss. You've got to keep going. You can't, do you know what I mean? You can't kick off.
Yeah.
And they said, and I just remember this sounds, sometimes I think, did I dream this? Because it was like a sort of Stepford Cuckoos moment. Is that the thing, Stepford Cuckoos? That's the thing, isn't it? Stepford Wives and Midwich Cuckoos. Okay, I've got them mixed up.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? There was like a weird alien moment where they're both just saying, conform, conform, conform. Right. And it sounds like a sort of bad teenager's A-level thing that they might write. But genuinely, that's what happened. And it's always stuck in my head. And I feel now I'm at 45 and I still haven't found the neural pathway to getting that anger and getting it out. I'd say one more thing before I let you speak. Sorry. Just because it amuses me. I remember having a recurring dream as a kid, right, where I was screaming at a dinner lady because... there was a tin lady, because they were really obtuse at my school, and just having this dream where I was going, it's not okay, you know, the way you behave at this dinner lady. And then obviously in real life, I could never do it. But the fact, it amuses me. I was obviously so repressed that I was having dreams where I was getting my anger out on a dinner lady. And my daughter now, you know, why it's become more relevant to me now even, is my daughter struggles with very similar things, you know. Of saying how she actually feels and daring to write, put her head above the parapet, if you like. So yeah. Could you fix that, please, Nick Helm? Because you're very good at accessing anger, I would say. I think. Maybe just...
When I first started doing more like aggressive stuff on stage, I didn't know... the difference between being on stage and being off stage. Like, I felt like what everyone liked about me was what I was on stage.
And right.
When I came off stage, I would have to be, I would have to sort of like maintain, not necessarily the aggression, but maintain that kind of like hyper, you know, but you know, that zone that you get into when you're on stage, I felt like I'd have to be that all the time.
Right. So almost like that was your brand that you had to kind of carry around.
When my act took off, I was very popular and I felt like, well, that's why they like me. And I've got to be like this all the time. And it's like, I've got to be my stage persona, not the angry side, but like whatever, or not specifically that, but whatever I was on stage, I'd have to be that all the time. And it was exhausting. Mm-hmm. And now I've just compartmentalized it all. I'm nothing like I am on stage. Mm-hmm. I do all of that for whatever it is a day or whatever it is a week. And I find it all so cathartic. And it's so silly and fun these days because I've done so much personal work on myself, done therapy, you know, done antidepressants, I've kind of done, you know, I've go for walks, I try and eat properly. Do you know what I mean? There's all these things that I've done on myself so I don't feel shit all the time. And separating who I am on stage and who, it's really good to know who you are on stage. And it's like, these are the parameters in which I'm allowed to play, right? I don't do that material and I don't do that material. I do this material. And within that bracket, I can do anything I want. And I think that's good. And then when I'm off stage, I've trained myself since the pandemic, even I've trained myself not to think about stand up too much.
Right.
And I sort of think about it when they call my name and then I get into the zone, do the show, and then I come off and I kind of like come back down again almost immediately. And I just think that's how I do it. I compartmentalize where I want to put it and then I put it there. But in terms of like how I access anger, I think in real life, the way I deal with anger is completely different. The way I deal with anger is I internalize it and I sort of like self-implode. But I think...
Do you ever want to use... I mean, that sounds like exhausting, like say, if you've got to be him, and that's kind of a persona or a character almost, isn't it? Then Nick Helm on stage,
yeah,
and then you're having to be him all the time. Yeah, it would be fucking exhausting. So sometimes with Anna, I'm like, I actually like Anna much more than me often.
Yeah.
And this new Colin that is sort of emerging on stage, I like. But I've sort of, I do sometimes genuinely go, God, I could be a bit like Anna in this situation and it would be better. And sometimes I do, and it kind of works, and it's quite nice. Do you know what I mean? But I don't want to walk around going, darling, fuck, you know. Sometimes I go on things and I think, God, I'm so boring. Do you know what I mean? In real life.
Well, there's a hyperactivity kind of level that you can kind of access when it's sort of like you come off stage, and I really enjoy talking to like audience members and fans and stuff like that. I love all of that. But I'm also kind of like this slightly in between. I give them a little bit of what they like on stage, but I'm also very kind of like careful to be like, well, that is an act and what I am is different. And
right.
So there's sort of like almost like, well, you'll know this. In Nolan's Batman trilogy, there were three Bruce Waynes, really, weren't there? There was the Batman Bruce Wayne. There was the Bruce Wayne with Alfred and Rachel.
Yeah.
And there was the third public Bruce Wayne where he was a drunken asshole coming off with supermodels. You know?
Yeah.
So he created two alter egos.
So which one is real? Which one is
Batman.
Just Batman? But Batman is the equivalent. Isn't that the equivalent of you going on stage?
Yeah, but also I would say no.
I like the idea of him really building himself up before he goes out for a fight, like really kind of pumping up.
Batman in the Nolan trilogy is a persona because he does the voice as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's an act, isn't it, really?
But I would say that Bruce Wayne tends to be the act, just like Clark Kent is the act. Clark Kent is actually Superman.
Yeah.
Superman isn't actually Clark Kent. He's not Banana Man, where he's Eric and then he turns into Banana Man. He's always Superman and he pretends to be Clark Kent. And Batman is always Batman. He just has to pretend to be Bruce Wayne for like opening up like an orphanage or something.
I don't know about. I see what you're saying and I hear this a lot, but I think I hear this a lot from Batman fans, but I think. But in a way, isn't it that he has to, you'd have to build up, you're not born Batman, are you? I mean, I guess Superman is born Superman.
You become Batman when your parents are murdered in front of you in an alleyway after you've just seen Zorro.
Yeah, which I've been trying to sort out for years. It's not happening. One of them's gone already.
That's how you become Batman. It's a
horrible point in any man's life where you get sort of 45 and you think, I'll probably never be Batman now.
Well, not due to the circumstances,
maybe on the stage.
What you've got to understand, Colin, is even Aquaman wishes he was Batman.
Oh.
So you've got to work out what superhero you are.
I'd like to be Mr. Fantastic, but is that just settling for...
the one that already exists. You've got to search for the hero inside yourself. I can't remember who said that, but...
I think it was... Was it M People?
It was, yeah.
It was one of the M People.
You can take that literally.
It was an M person.
It was definitely... It was my local MP, M person, yeah. Heather Smalls. It was... Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? You kind of like, you can't compare yourself with Batman. You've got to be whoever you are.
Well, I had this. I'm going to let you go now, Nick. But I did have this moment the other day. I was thinking about Batman, and I thought, I'm not sure Batman would really like me. Do you know what I mean?
I'm not sure Batman really would like anyone. Batman,
who does he like? Isn't... He likes young boys.
Batman isn't. Yeah, he does.
But that's it. An old man.
But don't make that into the thing. He identifies himself with other people, and it's that makes him strive to help others.
You'll notice Batman isn't in the boardroom. I don't bring him in. I just...
I would bring in Batman. How often do you think about Batman, would you say?
Two or three times a day.
Yeah.
But also I think about Wolverine as well a lot. He's closer to me, bizarrely.
Wolverine.
I know I'm not giving off strong Wolverine vibes, possibly.
Well, you're taller than Wolverine, right? You're taller.
I'm taller than Wolverine. A lot taller. Kick the shit out of him, mate. But I mean, I wouldn't. He'd tear me to pieces. But Wolverine has Wolverine's struggling with the animal within, isn't he? And he's someone who's just not right. I have a line in my show where I say, in my family, they didn't used to say, you know, autism and neurodiversity. They just had one line, is not right. And that was kind of all you needed. And I think Wolverine's definitely not right. Whereas yeah, Batman's sure. Almost like, I am right. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
but Batman to me is quite an authoritarian, unpleasant figure in some ways, I feel.
Well, Batman's neurodivergent, surely. He's sort of like, he's got OCD, definitely. He's kind of like, you know, I've got to get up every day and do 1,000 press-ups.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Obsessive.
Yeah.
It could be a sign of autism. Don't know. Not qualified to say. I think I should just become... why am I doing a podcast? I should just become an autistic therapist, shouldn't I? I get money. I get a regular wage.
You'd make loads of money.
Oh, God, I'd be absolutely loaded. Could buy a life-size Batman.
We should all do that. And then in the evening, we can still do comedy.
Comedy. I think that's what the Tories is kind
we
of...
We literally saying...
It to be a hobby again.
That we'll go back to comedy being a hobby.
Yeah. That's what they want, though. Don't let them do that. Don't let them do that, Nick.
I tell you, it was never a hobby.
No. What was it?
It was always a full-time life.
Yeah, you can't turn it off. I can turn it off, but it's if I don't have it, I get very ill very quick.
Sure,
it's
yes, I think yes. I didn't choose to be a comedian, a comedian chose to be me.
Really, Nick? Oh, lovely. No, that's sorry, you're trying to find an ending, aren't you? And that's a really good ending. Do you want to say that again?
No, I like. No, not particularly. I'm not trying to find an ending.
It felt really good.
You're reframing this like I can't wait to leave your fucking boardroom. When in actual fact, you've got another person turning up in 2 seconds.
You love it in the boardroom.
I do.
You can stay here all day if you want.
Anger. I try and get rid of real anger and everything on stage is just for fun and silliness.
Okay.
That's it.
Thanks so much, Nick. It's been lovely. It's been really lovely just to see you, actually. I could have just watched you for ages, genuinely. It was really nice.
Yeah, and you like my books.
The light in the darkness. All those Nazi books turned around so you can't see, obviously. Very clever. All right, Bubby boy. Thanks for this.
Thanks for having me.
I leave the boardroom and I'll catch up with you soon, I hope.
Yeah, brilliant. Great.
All right. Thanks, pal.
Good to see you. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Sort your brain out, baby, sort your brain out. It's crazy, sort your brain out, and let the sun shine in. Sort your brain out, lady, sort your brain out. It's crazy, sort your brain out, don't let the bad guys win. Sort your brain out, mate.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.